Blog Talk Radio.
Respect for the earth, respect for the water, respect for the Creator, respect for life itself. that heartbeat one more time, and it welcomes you to another edition of Indigenous Rights Movement Radio. I'm glad you all came today. I'm still waiting for my guest to phone in. Velma Martinez is supposed to be calling to talk about Oso Blanco, Byron Shane Chubbuck, who is a Apache Choctaw who's imprisoned at Lewisburg USP in Lewisburg, PA. I haven't had her call in yet. Talked to her two or three times today by email, and she said she set her alarm clock, but sometimes I think the time zone difference just confuses people, and so we'll wait and see if she calls in. If not, I'll talk a little bit about Oso, and then I'm going to beg my brother Ben to get on here and talk about a little bit of the prisoner experience, because our people experience prison a completely different way than the people of the dominant society, the dominant culture experience prison. I wanted just to read you a few thoughts that Oso himself has put out. And we need to recognize that prisoners are human beings. It's not like they walk into prison and stop becoming human. And this is a short statement Oso put out. It says, "I guess when I get down to basic hope, I just want people to be free and realize and discover the powerful elements of the great creator in all living things, free from destructive energy sources, free from political, religious formats of control, free from lies, free from toxic chemicals, free from fast food and free from sin, free from the masters of the political sheep control, free from gasoline and free from coal, free from TV and all the tech junk, free from the makeup, from the drugs, and free from alcohol, from all the things we humans have locked ourselves in, and for us to help the sick, the poor, and the handicapped." Oso's a warrior, and many of us claim to be warriors, and we fight in our own ways, and he took upon himself to fight in the way he saw that he could. During 1998-1999, he expropriated funds from several banks, and the funds he expropriated, he relayed to the Zapatista movement in Mexico to help those people down there in the real life and death struggle to save their land from a government who was encroaching upon it and killing their women and children and their men, destroying their land, and the people down there decide to stand and make a fight. That's a hard decision to make, and they made that decision. And I'm proud that he made that decision, and proud to be able to try to work a little for him to help get some basic rights restored to him, to help get a transfer possibly made, and help to get some sentence reduction. I think now I have Velma here. Let me see here. Velma, are you with
Hello.
Us?
Hello. Yeah, hi, Wombly. I'm sorry I called late. I had the time, central time, mixed up with the mountain time. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. That time thing gets confusing, especially when we're scattered out all across the continent, and I kind of figured that's what had happened.
Yeah, I apologize.
No problem. It's good to hear your voice again. We haven't talked since last time you and David and I talked, or have we? Yes, we have, haven't we?
Well, we talked for a little while afterwards, I haven't heard. It's nice to hear your voice, too, and I heard what you were saying, and I agree completely with that we need to try to get Byron's sentence commuted. I think it's worth a try. I think that he showed a lot of heart when he was doing what he did, and people, the feds don't particularly seem to like or appreciate that anymore. It seems like when somebody has priorities and they involve for the greater good, if it goes against what the feds believe in particularly is wrong, then you don't have a fighting chance. And I think that it's time to stand up in solidarity for not only Byron, but for all political prisoners, a lot of political prisoners anyway, the majority
of
them.
That's one point that needs to be very clearly made. Byron is a political prisoner, and you can see that very clearly in what happened with him in his sentencing. He's serving over 80 years for misappropriating funds from banks. People serve 8 to 10 years for killing people.
Yes.
And he is serving over 80 years for bank robbery. The thing to me, what it stands out, it's not an 80-year sentence. It's a death sentence. That is actually a death sentence. To think that he will survive for 80 years inside a USP is insane. So what they've done in their arrogance and in their belief that nobody cares and in their belief that nobody will stand up for our brothers, they said, boy, we're going to put you in there for 80 years and you're going to die in there. Well, you know what, Velma? I think we can make enough noise where they're going to be sadly disappointed because we're going to make some changes for Byron. And you know what I would like you to do, if you would? If you would just give people a rundown on Byron, on the case, and anything that you think people need to know about the case. I know he was shot during escape in the back, wasn't he?
Well, what happened was, no. When he escaped, okay, he got away, and he actually lasted, I think it was about 3 months escaping. And when he did, he went and he, you know, it's proven. I mean, there's actual footage of him in the banks.
Oh, sure.
Nobody
debates that.
Exactly. He did rob more banks, and the money did go, or the supplies did go down to Mexico from those bank robberies. But what I'd like to point out is that he was actually targeted, and I believe that if I build my documentary up and I start from the beginning, and if you just look at the headlines themselves, okay, the feds, when they were looking for him, they lied, and they said on the very front of the newspaper, they announced that Byron's Mother Melody, had claimed that he would go down fighting and that he would actually have a shootout with them, okay? But this was a complete lie on their part. So to me, they were building up their rationalization and justification for when they did run into him and they did finally capture him, that if they killed him, they would have, I'm going to say they had a storyline to back up their lies, because I really believe in my heart and soul that they were going to kill him, and they knew they were going to kill him when they went to capture him. And then what really proves my point and my theory is that they actually did shoot him in the back when they captured him with the MR-15.
Uh-huh.
And it came up in trial that they wanted to know, the judge actually wanted to know, what is this kill zone? Because when they had him in their crosshairs, they said he was in the kill zone, okay? So he didn't have his hands up. He didn't even know he was in their crosshairs, and they shot him.
To be shot in the back.
Exactly.
That's the whole point. He was shot.
And how do you pose a threat? That's my whole case, is that, you know, I thought that, you know, when they see you, and you know, because I do know that the judges and the courts, even all the way up to the Supreme Court, when it comes to cops, and they're justifiably shooting someone, they have to prove that their life was in danger. And that is understandable, okay? If someone pulls a gun out on you, well, then, you know, and you in self-defense and in wearing blue, you're going to shoot them. That's probably how you got trained. But he was not a threat. He was not posing a threat, okay? There's no way that when they have him in their crosshairs, they're going to be very far away from him when they shot him, and they shot him through the heart. But for some reason, the bullet just missed his heart, and it went around. And they said that if it would have, if his breastplate, since it came through his breastplate right in the middle of the center of his chest, it left a little bitty hole because the bone blocked it, actually blocked it. But they can't tell me that they weren't trying to kill him. And so here we come, you know, to this case in point. When they go and they have a fiduciary duty, okay, that's the difference between being a criminal and being a cop, okay? They are the ones that hold the oath.
They don't
take it seriously anymore. They even plan to murder someone that gets in their way.
Well, you can
see
by what you laid out right there, they were laying out their excuse to killing.
Exactly. I'd like to eventually, my documentary is gonna build on that theory because, I mean, there is an FBI file on Byron. So why can't I have used my freedom of the Journalism Act and use that and put my theory out there, you know?
Well, you can apply, and if you want me to help, I'll help you do it. You can apply through FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act, for everything concerning Byron. Everything. You can apply
Let's
for those
do
documents.
It.
Well, we'll talk about that during the week and start getting applications in for every document they have on him, and because you need access to him, his father needs access to them, Jericho needs access to them, and they're available. It may take time to get them, but we've got time.
We've got plenty of time.
And what we're
exactly.
going to try to do is limit the time he does. And if not a commutation, then possibly a sentence reduction, because the sentence in itself is absolutely outlandish. 80 years for robbing a bank. No, not a bank, several banks. But 80
right.
years for bank robbery is beyond the pale. People get 8 to 10 years on manslaughter. People are killed, and the people who kill them get 8 to 10 years. And what people don't understand is with federal sentencing guidelines now, 80 years... there's no parole. There's no good time. You do 80
right.
years.
Exactly.
And that's what we need to really work on. I know we're asking for people to make donations through Jericho. I put out several notices about that. The donations for the lawyer are to try to get sentence reduction and to try to get a transfer. Now,
right.
as I understand it, the lawyer said if he can't get sentence reduction, he'll refund the funds for the effort. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. That they are actually a lawyer firm that deals directly with the BOP, which is the Bureau of Prisons,
right.
Federal Bureau of Prisons. And they are but Byron himself is the one who applied to them, okay? And then he sent me the paperwork that they sent him. And so what we need to do is we need Mapache, and we need the crew. We need everybody. We need as many people as possible to raise the $1,000. It didn't seem to take that long for Sinapu and Mapache to raise the money that they used to go towards the lawyer for the transport to get him moved out of there. Now, that lawyer is currently working on his transport, but he's being very meticulous because he doesn't want anything to slip through the cracks. Now, Byron, at the same time, is being a little... Of course, because I know what it's like to be inside, and you get very restless in there.
Oh,
so
yeah.
because things aren't happening on the same time, concentrations, then at that time, you know, he wants it to, he thinks, you know, days go by slower there, so there's more time to think
right.
about
Absolutely.
Things.
More
so
time to think
just,
about it, more time to get impatient and to worry
exactly.
and to wonder is anybody doing anything. Yeah.
Exactly. And
we
are. We're doing everything.
We need to explain, too, that Mapache is Byron's father. Is that correct?
No. Mapache, no. Byron's father's name is John. Okay. Mapache is I like to call him a foot soldier, but he's not a literal foot soldier.
Right.
But he's a foot soldier for Byron, and they had an event on April 10th for Byron, in Englewood. Yeah. And I've met Mapache. He's come and stayed with Mother Melody, who is Byron's mother, and I for Christmas, him and Sinapu. And they are wonderful supporters, and I think they're part of the Black Anarchist Cross, is what they are. And so Mapache he's supposed to be calling in, but I think he might have the time wrong too. I'm going to try to text him here in a minute. But he's done a wonderful job supporting him, you know. And I believe personally they're giving him he's getting a lot of heat from the police because of it once it became publicized actually in LA, which is very sad. Now, some people, they don't think that I should be talking about this stuff, but I believe in the power of, you know, if you remain silent, especially when it comes to the authorities, I feel personally and passionately that you're in a lot more danger, okay?
Oh,
than
yeah.
if you come out and you say,
let me tell you something. Talk about it.
I strongly believe in that. I myself have gone head-to-head and toe-to-toe with many. I mean, I'm not proud of it, but I am proud that it seems that my voice kept them from abusing their powers as much as they could have when I personally have gone through it with them. And it's the same police force and the same exact detectives that Byron was getting beat and shot by 20 years ago. They're the same exact people.
Sure.
And they're just detectives now instead of cops. You see what I mean?
Well,
so because
the thing is, your voice, we have to use our voices. We should never have fear of using our voices.
Exactly.
Ever. Never have fear of using your voice. No matter who you have to direct it at, never have fear. The people we direct our voices at are people just like us. They may have better abilities than us to do certain things, but if we're all using our voice, they can't shut us all up. And I'll be real truthful, I don't think they have the balls to shut us all up. I don't think they do. I just don't think they do. They haven't shut me up. I've been on this for a very long time, and they haven't shut me up. And I dare them to shut me up. I dare them to try to shut me up. They're not going to shut me. You know?
I completely agree with you. And I hope I don't insult the native people, but it seems like the fact, you know, that because you tend to be more quiet, I mean, you know, on a whole, that the feds, you know, if you want to call them the white people, you want to call them the Spanish, whoever, they just walked right over for a while, you know, until people like you came out and said, you know what, I'm going to do what I can, and I'm going to use your methods, okay, because if you got to fight fire with fire, you know?
Yeah, the first thing you have to understand, if you're playing, what we do when we deal with these idiots is it's their game, so we have to play in their field. But we can play in their field, and we can beat them with their own rules, but we have to learn their rules. We have to know how to use our system against them. We have to know how to play the game. And we also have to understand that they're going to cheat every chance they get, and we shouldn't ever be surprised. As a matter of fact, we ought to plan on them cheating, and every day when you're planning your own work, you should plan on what they will do to counter your work and have that in mind, because once we start making enough noise, they'll try to counter the work we're doing, and all we have to do is have enough understanding of, okay, they may try this, they may try that, and we'll just have a comeback ready for them. But we can have an effect. I guarantee you we can have an effect. You know, if you would, go back when he was originally arrested. Where was he originally arrested at?
You mean when he got captured?
No.
He was captured and shot, or the very first time he got arrested?
The very first time.
Well, I mean, it goes way back, and I'm not real privy to what happened the first time. I do know that when they first went after him about the bank robberies, I think there was an anonymous tip. And so when they went to, this I do know because he wrote me and he told me specifics about this, okay, and this was in 1998, I believe. He was at a house here in Albuquerque on Decatur, him and his family, okay, and his family consisted of his wife, the mother of his child, who was then pregnant, about 6 months pregnant, Well, Byron was going to his house, and he was actually going in through the back door, and his wife, she tells him, you know, there's men here. Okay, she did not specify that they were cops, and these two white men were in plain clothes. They were in his bedroom, okay, hiding out. And when he came in and pushed his way through the back door, because he wanted to know, is my wife in danger? You know, who are these guys? Are they rival gang members, or are they trying to hurt my wife? You know, so he pushed his way through the door, and he got shot at by these two white guys. That's all he knew at the time. So he took the gun away, and he got in a he calls it like an old Western shootout. You know, I mean, with these guys who he has no idea who they are, and he gets the gun away and he wrestles with the one guy and he runs out the front door. Well, when he ran out the front door, he heard a shot and he heard his wife scream. So he thought, oh my God, these guys, these rival gang members or these, you know, whoever they are, they just shot my wife. So he went around to another house that was, because the apartments were all connected. And he went back in to see if his wife was okay? And the two guys were gone. And so his sister-in-law, his wife's sister, says, you've got to go. Those were the feds. And Byron looks at her and says, wait a minute. Those ain't the feds. And if those were the feds, they'd be suited up and there'd be a bunch of them, right? Well, right at that moment, a bunch of them were suiting up down the hall, down the street. And so now they go and they publicize it immediately as though Byron shot at these two cops, okay, who at the time, he still didn't believe his sister-in-law that they were cops, because the feds don't come and stay in your bedroom, okay, in plain clothes with guns and shoot at you. They came that close. They were like an inch away from his face when they shot him. Okay, so when they shot at him, so he decides that these girls, they've lost it. There's no way that these guys are feds, and so when he decides to run from the place, they attack him with the dog, and there's a question about why they didn't shoot him. They shot him with the beanbags. Okay.
Right.
And the question part is that they claim, if we pull out the records, I'd like to see what it says, but they think that there's a kid running next to him. And he believes that it was actually a spirit that was protecting him, because they actually said on the report, he claims, that the Fed said, you know, well, who is that kid running right next to him?
Wow.
So that's why they shot him with the beanbags.
Wow.
And as he lay there on the floor, on the ground, they were discussing who this kid was. He never saw this kid. He doesn't know what they're talking about. He thinks he's dying. So he's saying his prayers to the Creator, you know, because he thinks he's shot. So then he realizes, then they put the dog on him, and the dog starts attacking him. And he's all bit up, and he's all bleeding and whatnot, and they arrest him. And so then the reports come out later that he had actually shot at the feds, when really, in fact, the reality of it is, and a lot of times I think this is the case, is that he didn't know who he was shooting at. He just thought he was protecting and defending his family, you know, his dwelling, and they turned it all around into this propaganda that he was shooting at feds. Well, you know, they shot at him first, and he didn't know they were cops, and that's what it comes down to.
Well, and that's one of the things in this police state we live in now, and if you have any doubt we live in a police state, you haven't woken up here lately. In the police state we live in now, we hear over and over again of these thugs that are in charge of law enforcement breaking into the wrong homes, killing innocent people, and getting by with it because they made an honest mistake. That's the way they operate. You know, I've always wondered what kind of human being wakes up every day and their whole purpose of getting out of bed is to go out and cause pain on other people. to arrest people, to shoot people. What kind of mentality does that take? What kind of sick human being wakes up every day of their life? And that is their goal, to go mess with people. And they're trigger happy. It's amazing the number of people we've seen killed in the last 10 years, unarmed people, just terrible things. People shot 40 and 50 and 60 times with no weapons of any kind. Remember last year, a young man was shot the day before his wedding. He wasn't armed. He was just with some friends, and he got shot 20 or 30 times in Houston. A couple got shot. They busted into their house. The husband drew a pistol because he didn't know who it was. He thought they were being housebroken, and he drew a pistol, and they killed him and his wife, and they were on a drug raid, and they had the wrong house, and they got by with it. These people who are now in law enforcement are very little better than Gestapo, and they have very little concern for human safety. It was good that they saw the child running beside him and went to beanbags, but still, nonetheless, these people get by with murder and terrible things all the time. You know, when Byron, he was attacked in his cell by guards, three or four months ago?
Well, in June, it started in June of last year, and, it was June of last year when he got moved to Lewisburg. The very first day that he was transported there, they attacked him. And then a day after that, and then months after that, and in November he got attacked the last time. But MAPPA and I think even you were involved in that. A lot of people had a call in.
Yeah.
And they actually, I'd like to thank everybody for that from the bottom of my heart, because I personally, you know, I just being honest here, I wasn't available when in November when it happened. I had gone back to county jail. So I felt that something had happened to him, and sure enough, his mother wrote me and told me that they had attacked him. And so when they had the call in, it was very effective. It was effective enough to the point where they still have, thank God, left him alone. But they even went to him. They have unit managers and counselors in
right.
the prison there. And he went to Byron, and he asked Byron to have people back. Please back off and quit calling. Now, that's what we need. We need solidarity like that. That's exactly what we're looking for and what we're asking for. The money is not the issue. It's the solidarity with all.
And we've got that. We've got the ability with our network. If we need to put calls into Lewisburg, we can put hundreds and hundreds of calls into Lewisburg. What we need to be able to do is focus on the proper use of the calls. We don't want to make the calls petty, but we want to nail them with things when we make our calls.
Exactly. And what we want now is quiet. Since they're being quiet and they're backing off him, then we show that, okay, that's what we wanted. Okay, that was affected, and
right.
we don't want to be calling in, sporadically and making a, you know, we want it to, and crying wolf. We want it effective, and so we want them to know, you mess with them again, and we're going to come after you again, and we're going to come after you in numbers in solidarity. You know,
there you go, and. Every week that goes by, the numbers will increase, and he will have more people that can stand up for him. What people need to understand is going to prison is the punishment. That's the punishment.
Yes.
There is no right given to prison guards to mete out their own punishment once somebody is in prison. They're there more supposed to be as caretakers, not as deliverers of more punishment. We know it's not how it works. We know it just doesn't work that way, but we need to hold their toes to the fire every chance we get for Byron and like you say, every other political prisoner in this country. And my main interest is in the Native American political prisoners. And,
yes.
Because we have such a minority in this country. But we still have, with 3 million people, we have 3 million of our people in this country. We have 60,000 of our people incarcerated across the country.
Oh, my goodness. 60,000. I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah.
You,
and we had, go ahead.
Are you, no, is that the, what is the majority, is that the majority of population is natives in prison? Do they, are they the majority?
It depends on where the prison is located. It depends on if it's a federal prison or a state prison. In some of the prisons, yes, it is a vast majority of Native Americans. But again, it depends on if it's a federal or a state pen. By population, our people are represented, sadly, very much higher than any other race in the country by population. And that's because, you know, our people, first of all, don't have the ability to buy good lawyers to get themselves out of a crack. And to get themselves at least equitable sentencing. And we all know you do something wrong, you need to pay a price. But there is a line also to me that I see. You can break the law and not be doing anything wrong. You just broke the law. And you know, I look at these banks now that have taken, the president has taken $1 trillion out of our pockets and given to these banks. Who basically, they robbed us of $1 trillion, and while we're all going through this recession, the banks now are making record profits, and so I have no mercy for the banks. You know, I don't condone let's go out and do banks, but I understand where Byron took his stand, and he took his stand to save the lives of women and children and men down in Chiapas who were being attacked by the federal government of Mexico. And
right.
He took a stand to protect and defend and to help them. And I honor that. To me, that's a warrior. To me, that's a true warrior. I'm going to bring on a friend of mine, I'm going to bring on Ben Carnes. Ben and I have worked together pretty steadily for the last couple years. And Ben has been in prison. He was actually given an award, Native American Citizen of the Year, Humanitarian Award of the Humanitarian of the Year, while he was in prison. I'm going to bring him on here just a second.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, great.
Ben, are you there?
Yeah, I'm right here.
You've been listening to our conversation. Do you have anything that you can point out to Velma? Because we're just putting this together on the fly. There's already organizations set up, but it's scattered and among different groups. Do you have any thing as you have listened that you would like to share with Velma that you think can be helpful in this?
Well, you know, she talked about the Anarchist Black Cross Group, which is one group that always helped prisoners. And when she mentioned that, I remember I had a friend up in Denver, so I contacted him to see if he would listen to this show. But, you know, the idea, you know, for a lot of people, they've bought into being an American citizen. They should obey the laws. That they cannot conceive of, you know, robbing a bank. You know, when I was young, you know, I wanted to be a sculptor, a goat breeder, and a bank robber. But my grandfather standing there beat me to that. And he was also chalked up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The things that I know that some of the Indians I've met, the Indians I've known that have been in prison that have robbed banks, you know, that's usually what happens. You know, they get so frustrated that, you know, they try to get the church groups to help out and help support certain Native issues. And, you know, they don't have any money. But yet they see them putting money out for all these other programs. So they get frustrated and they figure they put themselves on the line and try to raise the money for the people to help out, you know, with struggles, with causes, you know, to help out families that, you know, they just got tired of watching suffer.
Yeah.
You know, so I can understand where Byron was coming from and why he did what he did. And...
And I mean, the thing about it is, you know, I told Byron one time, I said, if I had half the cojones that you had, I'd do what you did, but I don't. And so I'll leave that, you know, to the people that do. But at the same time, I'm coming from a more, well, let's just put it this way. My sister's a sheriff's deputy and she's always been a cop. So even before she started earning the money, she was a cop, you know. And so it's a personal. I have a personal thing. I'm going to go out on a limb. And I'm going to say it's personal, because she follows the laws that are written, okay, so to speak. the first time as a sheriff's deputy, she has to turn her head, okay, away from the corruption that I know is embossed within the Hobbs Sheriff's Department where she works. She's already, I know, had to turn her head. So because when she turns her head, she's the worst kind of criminal to me. And it doesn't mean, I don't care what it means to anybody else, but I was raised that apathy, like MLK Jr. said, is worse than the actual crime, okay?
Yeah.
And so it's personal. It's a personal thing. And if to me, if and I think a lot of kids feel the same way. I mean, I don't say go out and rob a bank, but I say look at the heart that it takes to not just rob a bank, but to rob a bank and look the feds in the eye and say, guess what? All that money, it's over in Mexico. You know, the supplies that I had bought is in Mexico. You know,
well, and that takes the courage of a warrior. And
yeah,
and I don't condone robbing banks. Ben doesn't, and you don't. But we understand when a warrior finally has to stand up and say, the brothers and sisters in Chiapas are getting murdered and slaughtered. They need supplies. How can I get it to them? I know where the money is. I'll expropriate some from where the money is. So we have a man who has stood up, and we need to honor now that he has stood up, and we need to honor that he needs to be treated correctly in the prison, and we need to do everything we can to get his sentence reduced or vacated and get a transfer for him. Hang on just a second here. I think we have Mapache here.
Oh, yay!
Hello?
Mapache, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Hi, Napa.
I hear you fine.
Hey, Wombly, Velma, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure. Sorry it took me so long to call in.
That's okay. Thank you for joining us. You've been listening to a little bit of what we were talking about.
Correct.
We've only got about 17 minutes left. I'm going to try to do a show twice a month for Byron.
All right.
And so if you would like to just tell us a little bit about what went on out there. Was it last week y'all had a benefit for him out on the West Coast?
Right.
Tell us about that.
Okay, so my name's Mapache. I'm with the L.A. chapter of the Anarchist Black Cross Federation in the United States, Canada.
Yay!
We do North American political prisoner support. And what we did last week is we had a benefit to support Oso Blanco, White Bear, and to continue to support what he was doing for the children of Chiapas, which was his mission to support Native children. And so we did this as a way to kind of show that we're all Oso Blanco in a way. And on a more significant and more tangible plane, we also did this to continue his mission to, like I said, support the children of Chiapas through funding them. And that was a way of us being in solidarity with him and also at the same time showing that steel and concrete cannot hold the Native spirit to continue to support his people. This was something that we organized, that half of the funds going to Schools for Chiapas and the children in the Zapatista Autonomous Communities, and the other half of the fund is going to Oso Blanco's legal defense, or as he has requested, a spiritual journey that he would like two of us to go on before he goes up for clemency. So we this was all
working. Was it well attended?
Yeah, it was well attended. We had a few hundred people there.
Wonderful.
We raised somewhere around like $300, but after paying all the costs of like different traveling people coming out and whatnot, we had about $140 to split. So we have 70 going to the Chiapas children, which if you look at it, the difference of the dollar to the peso, that's about, it's multiplied by 10, so that's about $700 going down there.
That's wonderful.
$70 is going towards his, like I said, his legal defense or his spiritual journey that he would like two of us to take on. That's myself and my comrades in Apu, who are both, as he says, as his native warriors on the outside. Because we got to remember that he's in there for us, and we are out here for him. And that's the same thing for the children of Chiapas. They're in the third world, and the Zapatista people are struggling. So we in the first world, who are in the belly of the beast, who are essentially benefiting from the globalization and the neoliberal policies that are oppressing them, we are responsible for taking charge to support them in any way possible and by any means necessary. And we have done that by taking on Oso's mission to support them through monetary means.
Let me ask you, for all of our listeners, our listeners, people who listen to our program, they are attuned to indigenous issues. That's what we're about. That's the name of the show, Indigenous Rights Movement.
Correct.
How can the person listening to the program today directly help the children of Chiapas?
If you go to schoolsforchiapas.com, can you double check that website for me, Schools for Chiapas? I believe it's, I'm asking my comrade right now to check that website, but I believe it's schoolsforchiapas.com. It might be .org, but when he gets it, I'll send that in. And they do Chiapas support directly with the Zapatistas. They're in contact with the Zapatistas, and I know that they meet with them, and they run everything through the Zapatistas, including the benefit show that we did.
.org?
Yeah, schoolsforchiapas.org. That's the website.
Schools?
Uh-huh.
Schools, S-C-H-O-O-L-S dot org?
Schools, S-C-H-O-O-L-S. F-O-R, yeah, C-H-I-A-P-A-S, schoolsforchiapas.org.
Somebody type that out on the thing there for me, on the chat room, schoolsforchiapas.org.
Right.
Somebody type that out so everybody else can see it, please. I can't type and talk.
Well,
what I'm talking here, Mapache, we have a chat room also that's open.
Oh, okay.
There are people on our show. Some of our listeners are in this chat room, and they can share this information back and forth, and they're... every one of them that is on there is an activist of one kind or another.
Okay, cool.
So there you go. Thank you, Catherine. I see it's up there now. Go ahead.
Can I also say that we actually, Jericho, Paulette Dauté, she
right.
actually designed some cards that have also paintings that he painted when he was in Leavenworth. And so I would like to say that if anybody's interested, they are beautiful oil paintings, but they're on, you know, cards, you know, like you can use it as a get well card. It's blank on the inside, but it has this painting on the outside. And we're going to make a bunch of those. And if anybody at all is interested in buying and purchasing them, they can contact, Paulette or me. And let's see. You can go to Albuquerque, or it's albq.jericho@gmail.com for more information, or you can go to my email, clouds to C, which is the word clouds, the number 2, and the letter C, at live.com. And I liked what Mappa was saying, so I'm just going to be quiet and listen to Mappa.
Okay, Mappa, go ahead, because we've got about 12 minutes left, and pass on as much information as you can. And then we'll have you back on. We'll do another show in a couple weeks, and we'll have everybody back on, and we'll keep updating.
Okay.
And our goal is to fire people up and get people involved.
Good, good. So what is it that you wanted to, I guess, ask me warmly more about Oso's case, or is there anything else that you wanted to ask?
Tell us what you see about Oso's case. How do you see it?
Well, the way that I see Oso's case is the way that I see... first and foremost, on the ground level, we need to look at it as Native American in prison, as brown and red people in prison, the two indigenous people of the United States, which is Mexicans and American Indians. And if we look at it, it's not a coincidence that, as Angela Davis put it, prisons are institutions that are continuations of slavery. So it's not a coincidence that the majority of people in prison are black, brown, and red people, because we were the first slaves, and as we all know, as our populations began to diminish, African people were brought over by force as well to replace us as slaves. So 95% of our population, those are the estimates that the highest estimates about how many of us were exterminated. So that on its own is shocking, and if we look at Oso's case through that, we see that he is being made a slave, and slavery is continuing through the penal system and through the injustice system, through the prison industrial complex. On a second note, however, the plot kind of sickens when you add Oso's political history to it. Now, Oso's been in a variety of different prisons, Coleman and whatnot, and we've never really had so much problems, so many problems as what we're seeing right now in Lewisburg, and I think that is because... like also said, there's not too many natives that are on the yard. Leonard Peltier and a few others being the only ones. It's pretty much like a handful of natives that are on the yard. Everyone else is segregated into control units, or they're accused of being gang members, and that's what they tried to do with Oso as well. So What it does is serve a function to further torture and demoralize Native peoples by cutting them off. Also, not even allowed to sweat or engage in any other spiritual services, which is a violation of the American Indian Religious Freedom Act passed in the 1970s.
Absolutely it is, yes.
Amen.
And if we continue to look at his case for what it is, he's basically on 23-hour lockdown. Well, he is on 23-hour lockdown. He hardly ever goes outside. He is denied phone calls, denied visits. His own mother cannot visit him. So he's facing two elements that are being employed by the state to constrict him, and one of which is the continuation of slavery as an indigenous person, and the second one being he's being targeted for his political views. He's been targeted for his political work, and they're afraid that he's going to be able to organize his prisoners. They're afraid that if he gets out, he's going to be able to organize his community, as he has been doing from behind bars through groups like the Anarchist Black Cross, of which I must mention there is a chapter in Albuquerque. So,
well, and what you're saying, their own actions make him a political prisoner.
Correct.
And correct. That's what we need to understand, is we have to deal with this as it truly is. He is a political prisoner.
Correct.
His sentence,
he went in a political prisoner. He wasn't...
Absolutely.
He didn't go in and then decide, I think I'll be a political prisoner.
He's not a social prisoner. He was politicized and targeted for political actions. That is why he received the sentence he received. That is why there was a gag on him when he was in the courtroom. That is why he was denied access to speak on his behalf when he was in the courtroom. That is why they had his mother described it, but they had some type of device on him where they could administer shocks to him while he was in the courtroom. So he was pretty much decommissioned from his own trial, and that's similar to what they
said. Listen to what was just said, my friends. Mm-hmm. This is going on in this country, and you need to understand this is going on to people of color. As Mapache said, the first slaves were still being treated like that.
Correct.
Instead of chains on our feet, they have electric shock things on a prisoner so he can't react. They have him gagged at his own trial. This, again, he was set up as a political target, and he's been treated as a political target.
Correct.
And that we have to attack. We have to go at it every way we can. And this lock, he can't even see his own mother. Did I hear you say that?
Correct. His own mother is not allowed to visit him. He's not allowed to make any phone calls.
How long has that been like that? I mean, how long has it been the situation?
He had been, from what I understand, ever since he went into Lewisburg, and I believe that that's why they sent him into Lewisburg, because the institution itself is highly archaic and is benefiting from practices that have continued to unfairly target people of color, and in his case, as a political prisoner, as a political person of color, it basically serves the means of them to further demoralize him and break his spirit, because he's not even being allowed access to the fundamental rights that most other prisoners get. A rapist or a murderer can receive phone calls and can have visits, at least from their own mother, but someone who put their life on the line to support and feed Native children in the third world can't. That's a bit absurd to me.
Yeah, amen. Amen to that, Mapache. That's awesome.
Well,
you said
do we need to pressure Lewisburg to allow him to have visits, or does Oso want us just to be quiet right now?
I'm going to write him and see what it is that we're going to need to do, and I also need to speak with Paulette, because at the moment there was supposed to be some work being done for him on behalf of trying to get him out, working for clemency, but also is a bit hesitant on that right now until we can, a couple of us, like I said, myself and Sinapu, can make it out to the Cherokee Nation to do some spiritual work as he has requested from us. So at the moment, I don't know what direction his campaign is going to go. We're still a bit indecisive on what he wants and what Jericho and ABC is coordinating. It may be being moved to Atwater, California, and that's where... That's most likely what we may be doing right now, because Lewisburg doesn't seem to be working at all, so we may just want to get him moved. I'm going to keep everyone posted, though, through osoblanco.org, osoblanco.org, and the next action that comes up, the next letter writing and the next call-in, people can have more information about that there.
That's great. I got a letter from him this past week, and we'll write him this evening after the show. And I'll ask him, too. I've already asked him in the letter I've started if there's things that he wants me to be doing personally and having our people do. And if we can coordinate all our efforts together, you've already got great efforts going on, and we can pull in our efforts to help. and we've got a voice, and our voice gets out. So we'll all be working on this together. We've got about 4 minutes left. Delma, I want you to, first of all, I want to tell anybody who wants to write to Oso, they can write to Oso at Byron Shane Chubbuck, C-H-U-B-B-U-C-K. Be sure and put his number. It's number 07909051, USP Lewisburg, U.S. Penitentiary, P.O. Box 1000, Lewisburg, PA, 17837. And drop him a card. Drop him a note. Tell him you're learning about him, you know about him, you want to let him know that he's not alone, that he has people out here that are standing with him, standing for him. Lift his spirits up, because when you're in an iron house like that and you don't get mail because your mail hadn't gotten read and passed to you yet, it's very easy to get worried, to get paranoid, and that's a part of the trick they're pulling on him now by not letting him have phone calls and visits with his own family. So drop him a line anyway, and you can check my pages and everything, and his address is on there. We got 3 minutes, Velma. You have anything you'd like to add?
Yes, by all means. I completely 100% agree with McPatchy. Thank you, McPatchy, for calling.
Thank you for having me.
Please feel free, you know, that we'll need you. We need your support. We need Sinapu. Sinapu, I've begged him to come with you so that you can go on your spiritual journey to the Cherokee land, the nation in Oklahoma, and you can stop by and stay with Mother Melody and I. who is Byron's mother, and we miss you, and we'd love to have you. And also, the big thing here is let's get Byron moved to Atwater, because he's got a lot of supporters in California. I mean, 300 people showed up, and there wasn't very much advertising. There was great advertising, but there was only a couple of days.
For a transfer, Byron has to put a request in for a transfer himself.
We can't do it, but we can say that we're expecting it. We can let Lewisburg know that that's what we expect from them, you know. And it's going to be hard, because right now he's in SMU, and it's going to take at least 8 months to get him out of SMU. But at the same time, if we start the campaigning to let them know that we are in solidarity, and we want him in California. We want him with Sinapu, and we want him with MAPA over there, closer to California. And Mother Melody can go visit a lot easier from here, fly there, you know.
All the way across the country, correct?
Yeah.
Because
he's thousands miles away.
We'll keep up the contacts. We'll broaden the contacts. We'll get together again in a couple of weeks. Velma, you give me a call if you have to talk about anything, and give Apache my phone number also, if you would, please.
By all means.
I appreciate you both coming on. Ben, you still there? I appreciate you coming on, bro, and we're just about out of time. I want to tell everybody thank you for coming on. Help us if you would. We got a brother who stood up and put his life in danger for the children of Chiapas.
Right.
This is a warrior. This is a true warrior. We can't let ourselves turn away from the sacrifice he made for the children of Chiapas. So if you would, every place you see where I'm putting information out, or anybody else is putting information out, stick in here, help us help also, let's all come together with this. Let's put a big effort in it. And let's show these people at Lewisburg and the Department of Injustice that also is not standing alone, and they're going to be hearing our voices. And again, Velma, Mapachi, Ben, I appreciate you coming on this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. My honor, sir. And we'll all be talking again soon. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, Wanbly, Eagle, and Sue.
Hi.
Thank you so much.
My honor, completely.
Respect for the earth, respect for the water, respect for the creator, respect for life itself.